This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for readers to read and writers to enjoy a good book. And I'm telling you, if you are up there in the snow, you should be down here. We have wonderful weather. And it is just so, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper today an author who sets the scene for Christmas, and it is a wonderful book, and it is the 10th in her wonderful series called Bake Shop Mysteries. I want to welcome to Joy on Paper Ellie Alexander. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Wow, I love Bake Shop Mysteries. They are all fantastic. But this new one, I think it is just, I mean, it came just at the right time for me. And it's called A Cup of Holiday Fear. And it's always funny, you know, when you have cozy mysteries, you know you're going to need a body in there somewhere. And it's a nice little art to get that body in there in a Christmas story. And you've done it so beautifully. And the most wonderful thing, I tell you, I always enjoy books that have recipes because I'm a great baker, and I love the recipes in your book. But what is so nice that it came just before Thanksgiving, and so I'm reading it, and sort of it's putting me in the mood. You know, I'm here in Florida where we have like 80 degrees weather. We never get to turn off our AC, but you paint such a beautiful, and it's your writing is so good that you really take us into this Christmassy feeling. I love the Dickens aspect of it. We lived in Texas, we used to go to Galveston every year, where they had a gigantic Dickens festival, turned all the streets into a Dickens world. And there is nothing as much fun as having that Dickens feeling. So I really want to compliment you on how you've written this book so beautifully that I was just engrossed with it.
Oh, thank you. That's so lovely to hear.
So tell us a little bit, well, you can tell us about the series and tell us particularly about this book, because your main character is fascinating, and her name is Juliet Capshaw, but Jules, everyone calls her Jules. Tell us about her bakery and about what's happening in this book.
Sure. So we are set in Ashland, Oregon, which is where I live, so as far away from Florida as you can get, basically. And our weather is not quite as charming as yours in terms of winter weather, although it is perfect for this ideal holiday setting for sure. In the series, Juliet has returned home to Ashland to heal a broken heart and help run her family bake shop, Tort. And Tort is kind of the gathering place for the community. It's more than just a bakery. It's where everyone comes together to have a delicious pastry and a lovely latte, and then, of course, you know, maybe chat about murder. Because, as you said, in these cozies, there's always a body. You have to have the body. And in this particular book, A Cup of Holiday Fear is the 10th book in the series. It is Christmas time in Ashland. It's so interesting because living here and writing about it, I always am meshing my fictional and real world. So I will forget sometimes if I'm walking downtown on Ashland's Plaza that Tort, my bake shop, is fictional. It's not real. It's just in my head. But I will think like, oh, I should pop in and have a coffee and check in and see how Jules is. And then I kind of have to stop myself. Ashland is really home to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So it is themed like an Elizabethan village, which I think makes it such a great setting for a cozy, because it's kind of like stepping into a scene from, you know, the Cotswolds in England or something, and we get a lot of snow. And so in this book, it starts out with the annual holiday parade, which is a real thing where everyone comes out, 20,000 people come out to the plaza, and the entire village gets lit up. And then the Dickens feast takes place at the Winchester Inn, where, of course, Juliet stumbles upon a body in the middle of that beautiful eight-course feast.
Well, as I said, your writing is so really, it's fine writing. It's the kind of writing that is what I call, there's writing that just takes you in, sort of sucks you in, and you have it here. You're walking down the streets and you're thinking, well, it's real. And as a reader, I'm thinking, this is real. I mean, I'm ready, to get on a plane and come to Ashland and go and to the tort and get some delectable bakery. So where did that come from you? Are you a great baker? Is that how you got yourself involved in that?
Yes, for sure. So I think food is such a love language, and if nothing else, I hope that comes through in the series. And of course, we know cozy mysteries are light, fun escapism, but I like adding that touch of realism, and I think that comes through a lot in the food, because food is so sensory. It's such a point of connection for us. I grew up in the kitchen with my parents, who food was a love language for as well, but they had very different baking styles. So my mom was like your traditional Betty Crocker baker. She would bake every day and kind of just slather chocolate buttercream on a cake, but usually her cakes were lopsided. Everything tasted great, but maybe it didn't look so beautiful. Whereas my dad was an English teacher who specialized in Shakespeare, so that's kind of where Juliet gets her background. And he would craft a magnificent 8-layer mocha almond buttercream tort on a sundae and pipe the top and hand place beautiful hazelnuts and almonds on it. So they had very distinctive baking styles, but they came together in the kitchen. And I try to capture some of that in the pages of the Bake Shop Mysteries.
Well, you do. You make us, as I said, I'm reading this before Thanksgiving, and I'm already, getting all of my ingredients. And I'm always been a big baker, and I must say I overdo it a little bit at Thanksgiving. My son went back, he's up in Madison, Wisconsin, and he went back with a suitcase full of cookies and biscotti. It was fun for when he was here. I would say, it's exactly what you said, that your dad did this wonderful presentation. And I think so many young people now with this British baking series, they're more interested in cooking. And I don't know if you market it around the British baking series when they come out, because I think the kids will enjoy these stories as much for the stories, but also for the food and the recipes. So I think you have a lot going for you with this series.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I'm a huge fan of the Great British Bake Off. I've been a fan for years. And I do think there's this beautiful resurgence with younger people kind of sharing that. And food is such memory, too. And so to be able to have those family traditions, where you're packing a suitcase of biscotti or whatever it is, food just, it brings us together in a way that nothing else does. So I think it pairs beautifully with mysteries for that reason, because a mystery is all about the community kind of coming together, gathering together to figure out who done it and bring justice to whatever the crime is. And so I think that that's probably one of the reasons why cozy mysteries resonate so much, because you're pairing that food with the mystery.
Well, I did my first full puff pastry this year. That's the first time I did it. And I tell you, that's hard work.
That's a lot of elbow grease, right?
It really is. They make it look easy on that show. And you make, you describe the food so beautifully. And, having baked, I say, it's not quite that easy, but it's fun to be reminded. And so I just think you've been really successful, I think, with this series, because as I said, the people that you've created around the people who work in the bakery. Tell us about them and how you've created this family. She's really, and through the 10 books, I think you've developed a nice relationship with the workers.
Yeah, so I think one of the gifts of getting to write a longer running series is that over the course of time, I get to develop the secondary cast of characters as well, which has been such a delight for me, because in mysteries, in this genre, as you well know, you have suspects with each book, usually 5 to 6, and they are basically there to drive the plot forward, right? You don't get to spend a ton of time developing them. But the secondary cast of characters, so Juliet's team at Tort, she has a young barista, Andy, and a sous chef, Sterling, and Stephanie and Bethany. And my favorite character to write is her best friend, who happens to be the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Lance. So over the course of time, all of those characters have had a chance to kind of take center stage, and I've gotten to develop them and really build a family around that. And it's just such a challenge and a joy to be able to flesh out a bigger cast and really make that world here in Ashland come to life.
Well, when you started the first book, did you realize it would be such a massive series and growing? Because I see no end to it. People just, I know, you know, I was at BoucherCon 2019, and so I was talking to people about, you know, my program and some of the people who were coming on, and you have really fans who know your books so well, and you've managed to, you know, you get nice reviews on Amazon, you get a nice following, and so I was very pleasantly surprised when I said, you know, I'm going to have Ellie Alexander. And it's a nice name too, Ellie Alexander, if people can remember it. But did you realize that you were going to have such a long-running series?
No, I didn't at all. I mean, I'm so grateful for that. When I first wrote Meet Your Baker, the very first book in the series, I was trying to find my way into who Juliet was going to be as a character. I knew that I wanted to set the series here in Ashland. I had grown up in the Portland area, but we visited Ashland quite frequently because my dad taught Shakespeare, and this is home to the Shakespeare Festival, and it seemed like such an idyllic setting. But I couldn't really figure out who Juliet was as a character. And once I came up with the name Juliet, like, oh, of course, it's Shakespeare, she has to be Juliet, then it kind of easily found its way onto the page from there. But I thought in that initial book, Juliet is leaving the ship. She's been a pastry chef on a cruise ship for 10 years before she comes home to Ashland. And I thought that Carlos, her husband, was kind of going to be a tossaway character. But now, 10 books in, every time I sit down to write a new manuscript, he pops into my head. So, no, I definitely did not think that it was going to continue like this. And there are more to come. Like you said, I'm actually working on book 12, and book 11 is already off to my editor.
Well, sometimes this happens when a character just comes to you and then becomes part of your life. And I'm sure that there are times that Jules is like, okay, stop doing everything else and sit down and write some more for me.
Yeah, exactly.
isn't it wonderful? Isn't that's exactly why I named this program Joy on Paper. That feeling of joy you get when your characters become so real to you and you sit down and you're writing, and after a while you almost forget that you're writing because you're in communication, let's say.
Yes, exactly. I know, and I had always heard authors speak about that. I never thought it was real until it happened to me. Another funny side note is, before I started writing mysteries, I'd been doing really serious work out in the world. I'm a former speech therapist, and I was working for the Alzheimer's Association here in Oregon, and I kept thinking in the back of my head that I wanted to write a cozy mystery, and I would think, I can't do that because they're about joy and lightness. And one day I was walking with my girlfriend, and she said, you know, I'm in the hospital with my mom right now, who had breast cancer at the time, and I just want a little escape and joy and light in my life. And for whatever moment, at that point in time, it resonated. And I thought, okay, that's my mission in writing something like this. I get to bring a little joy and hopefully an escape to somebody, even if it's just for a couple hours.
Exactly. So you see, the name of my program is right.
It is
Joy on Paper. And you give joy. I mean, it makes you joyful to write it. And then the joy that you give to the readers. And as I said, I'm in BoucherCon, and there are lots of, you know, writers, there are lots of cozy writers. But the wonderful thing, what I spent a lot of time was trying to talk to fans and finding out what they like, because I want to know, you know, I was saying, asking them for suggestions for authors that they would want me to interview. And so, as I mentioned, I mentioned your name. And I mean, so many of them immediately. Ellie Alexander, of course, recipes, food.
Yeah.
And it's such a wonderful connection when your name is associated with delicious things. Yes. Everybody wants to go to Tort. And I love that you have centered it in a real town. I think that's a great thing to do. And I'm sure that people actually go there and they're wondering, why, where is Tort? You know, it's surprising that nobody's actually opened the bakery yet. Maybe you could do that in your spare time.
I know. That's my long-term goal. I do. I have a little map that I am putting together because I do get so many requests from readers to say, where is Tort in the plaza? And Ashland as a community has so embraced the series. I think in part, too, because it feels like I'm writing a love letter to Ashland. Too.
Yeah,
anything that I include is positive, of course.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying, that it is a real place, and it's a real place in the reader's mind. And so you've done a terrific job, a really terrific job. I think it's one of the best cozy mystery series of all. And I'm so thrilled that, you know, you were on the program today. And I know that people will enjoy, you know, this mystery. Of course, it's the Christmas one. And I think I'm, as I said, I love anything with Dickens myself. I can reread Dickens over the years. I've read it so many times, and I love, you know, the Christmas stories. I love everything to do with Dickens. So you've set the spot, and in this book, which is called A Cup of Holiday Fear, we can enjoy Ashland in the snow. And then I'm sure anybody who reads this, you can read it as a one-off, but anybody who reads this will want to go back and start at book one and see how you develop the character, because that's a sign of a great writer, too, how you develop the character, develop the story, and how it changes, the relationship changes a little bit. And I think Jules becomes a really wonderful character. And Ellie, I think you are just a terrific writer.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind.
Okay, so what's your website? Where do you want people to find you?
Sure, they can find me at ellyalexander.co.
Okay, and they can also find out about your books, find out more about recipes, and all the delectable treats that everybody there at Tort bakes up for everyone. And if they can, they should just start baking. Isn't it right that you should learn to bake one thing actually really well that you can do over and over sort of in your sleep, and you're always ready for it, and you're not under pressure, you know? Don't you think so?
Oh, for sure, yeah. You should always have a signature dish, and that could be something as simple as shortbread.
That's it.
The classic shortbread for the holidays.
Perfect. Okay. Ellie Alexander, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It was a joy to talk to you.
And same here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday and Merry Christmas to you.
You do the same.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay. She's great. We're going to go to commercials and that's it. Okay.
Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money? earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8, it's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life. Dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try, but first he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do. A little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all. Even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You Hope, written by a true American hero. You'll love this book, now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am so thrilled to welcome back to Joy on Paper, David Baldacci, for the sixth time. Hi, David.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, it's really such a thrill to have you back on the program. You know, I was just at BoucherCon 2019, and I just have to thank you so much, because so many people who have been listening to my program over, you know, I started 4.5 years ago. I had no experience in radio. I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew is I had favorite authors. And I was so blessed, really, that I got, you know, so many of you guys and gals on that I am. Sometimes I just can't even believe it. I say, I am actually talking to these people and I'm meeting them at all of these wonderful events. And so I really owe you a lot, because so many people, because of you, have listened to Joy on Paper. All I have to do is send out the message that I've got you on the program, and people tune in. So I really owe you just a big thank you. For all you've done for Joy on Paper.
No, that's, well, you give a forum for writers and readers and all that, and that's very powerful, and we all welcome that and thank you for that.
Well, you know, it's, as I said, it's a thrill, and it's so funny. I didn't mention it last. I meant to mention that I had a mailman, and he was delivering the mail, and he, of course, right when I started the program about 4 years ago, he said, oh, you're getting a lot of books. I said, yeah, I'm getting a lot of books. And he said, so I told him I had the program. And then the first time you were on, he came to me, and he was so grateful. He said, you know, I could have a PhD in David Baldacci. And I said, yeah, that was funny. And he said, I listened to, first of all, he reads every one of your books. And he listens to them as he's driving around, you know, delivering mail. But he's the audiobooks, he listens to them over and over. And so he was quizzing me. You know, he was saying, oh, you know, do you remember this one? Do you remember in The Target, the Target? I like that Jessica girl. I really, he knew the details. And I felt, I was a little embarrassed. Like, I mean, I know your work very well, and I've been reading you for years. But, I mean, this guy knew every book. You know, it's, and this is, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful that there are people out there who really so relate to your characters? And of course, with now with the new book, the new character, I think she has just taken off. I just have to tell people that, you know, the new book is called A Minute to Midnight, and the name of the main character is Atlee Pine, and she is such a great character. And in all your characters are great. You know, Amos Decker's my favorite. I still love Amos, but yes. Atlee is amazing.
Well, and I, you know, in creating her character, I wanted to do something a little bit different, having a female protagonist be the sole lead in the novel without, you know, sidekick with another guy. She has an assistant, Carol Blum, who's an older woman, a different generation, but she's terrific for Atlee. They have such a dynamic relationship. And, you know, Minute to Midnight is a sequel to Long Road to Mercy, and it starts off with her being at the Supermax prison in Colorado. She's talking to Daniel James Torr, prolific serial killer who she thinks might have abducted her twin sister Mercy 30 years ago when they lived in Georgia. And she's trying to get resolution for what happened to her sister because her disappearance destroyed her family. And she gets no resolution from Tor. She leaves. She's heading back to Arizona. And while she's still in Colorado, she gets an Amber Alert. Little girl's been snatched by a bad guy. She finds a guy, confronts him in a box canyon. They have a
Okay. Oh, David, this is my problem. I don't like to tell everybody everything. You know,
this is the first chapter.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. That first chapter, anybody who reads that first chapter is just hooked. I mean, absolutely hooked. Yeah. Because Atlee, I don't know if you deliberately chose the name, if you always select the names that turn out to be perfect for the character, but with having the last name Pine, because she's a strong big girl. She's not a little delicate wallflower, and right. I think there's Atlee with Atlas and Pine with a nice erect, straight pine tree. I thought that's so clever, and it's a name that people will remember.
It is. It's kind of a 1-2 punch. Atlee's a little bit unusual. It's like Amos Decker. You don't hear Amos anymore. You really don't hear Atlee all that much, but the last names are recognizable. They do stand for something. And I do take a lot of time with the names. I think they're important because they're going to be there pretty much on every page. And I want them to be memorable. I want them to be sort of symbolic. So, Atlee Pine, it came to me pretty quickly. It symbolized what I wanted it to do. And I think it's the perfect name for it. I couldn't think of a better name.
No, the minute you hear the name and you read just a little bit about her, she's like in your mind forever. She is one of those characters that will stay in your mind, just like Amos. People can visualize Amos. As I said, I was at BoucherCon, and so one of the things that I really learned last year, we had BoucherCon here in St. Petersburg, which was really great for me because it was in my backyard. But the opportunity to meet so many fans and to discover, I mean, as with my mailman, he's so just adores your work and thinks about it and listens to you all the time. And you know, all of this, and then to see people at BoucherCon, these fans who have favorite authors, have been coming to BoucherCon for 20, 30 years. But they know the characters, and when they're talking to me about the people who have been on my program, you know, I've had 9 Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters on, and I've had, you know, the Poet Laureate of the United States, and I've had, you know, so many wonderful authors. But when it comes down to it, they'll tell me this is my favorite author, and how much they know about the characters and how involved they are and care. I mean, people will really care about Atlee, and they really want to know. Well, the new book is wonderful because we really learn the backstory a great deal of the backstory that we didn't get in the first book.
Yeah, you really do. And you understand where she's coming from, what's happened in her life. And, you know, that one tragedy early on really permeated throughout her entire life. And it's come to the point where, you know, in her mid-30s, she knows she has to confront it. And I think she's been fearful of doing that. But it's gotten to the point now where she's not sure if she can move forward in her life without figuring out what happened in her past. And that really is what this book is about. And I do think that people will be in there rooting for her because she's very human in this book. She's vulnerable and she's fragile. She's a very strong person. She's very tenacious. She's an FBI agent and she wants to get the job done. But this is a very personal case for her to investigate. And I think that's one reason why Carol being with her is really important, because she sort of cements and tethers her to the ground and kind of acts as sort of her anchor in this book. And in this story, she really needs that.
I was so glad that you gave Carol a bigger part, because she's a character that really resonates. I mean, there's something about her, exactly that the maturity and her obvious deep care for Atlee and wanting to help her. I think it's just so beautifully written. As you said, you know, you're a guy writing a female character, but you don't hold anything back. You really make this a strong character, as I know, I think it was maybe your wife's idea that you write a woman character, and you've done it in such a wonderful way. And in this book, I must say, there are a number of sort of sub-stories blended in there. You have a lot of twists and turns in this book, I tell you. I was holding my breath sometimes.
Yeah, it really was. There was a lot going on in this book. I threw a lot at her. There's a lot of misdirection and a lot of things that, you know, you just would not figure out until the end when it all came together. And Carol Blum, you know, I will auction off character names for charities in my books, and I've done probably 100 of them over the course of my career, where people will donate money to the, you know, Cancer Society or a literacy organization or whatever. And then, so Carol Blum was a name auction winner.
Oh.
She's an actual person, lives in Florida. I met her husband, won the bid, and she's a big fan. And so now she's the only named character that I've ever brought back in a second book and made a real, you know, major character. So I remember I was down in Florida, and Carol lives down there, and she came up to me and she said, I have to tell you, you know, after my friends are all telling me after reading Long Road to Mercy that they never knew I was so cool.
Well, she is a cool character, a wonderful, wonderfully done. And I was happy that you took her on this adventure throughout the book because I didn't want to leave her back there. I didn't want to leave her back there, and I wanted her to be involved, and she certainly is. And I must say that, you know, one of the wonderful things about the story is, tell us just about Atlee, about how she landed up where she is, her position in the FBI, why she's out west.
Yeah, so she, you know, she started out, obviously went to the academy in Quantico, got her shield and credentials, worked on the East Coast for a while. Then she decided in Long Road to Mercy, she's at a FBI, they call it RA, resident agency, very small agency. She's the only agent there. It's in Shattered Rock, Arizona, which is right next to the Grand Canyon. That's not a real town. I invented that. I just thought I wanted her to have her own place. And she likes being out in the wide open space. So she doesn't, you know, she gets claustrophobic with a bunch of people around her. She's the only federal agent for hundreds of square miles. Anything that happens on a federal basis in the Grand Canyon, any crime, that's her jurisdiction. She doesn't like bureaucrats looking over her shoulder. She wants to run her own cases, you know, and catch the bad guys and do her job. And that's just the sort of world she's built for herself. She has no ambition higher than that. She doesn't worry about moving up in the agency. She doesn't want to be the FBI director one day. She just wants to be in the trenches, fighting crime, catching the bad guys.
And she certainly does. I do like the Western setting. I think it's again, it's something different. You know, of course, I love all of the terrorist ones and all the ones that take us overseas and all of that. But I've really developed a great fondness for books set in the West. I think partly because of C.J. Box. I love his books.
Right. That's right.
You know, he really he describes the West so beautifully that you really you feel that expanse. You feel the openness, and so it's the same here that you feel that there's so few people around. And then when things happen, they happen sometimes very fast and it's very exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. It's not a whole army of police officers or agents to call upon. You're sort of, fly by the seat of your own pants, and there is no backup.
No SWAT team. Sometimes you bring in the SWAT team, and everybody else is sort of, everybody's there. But in this case, she's like a one woman SWAT team sometimes.
She is, and I think she likes it that way. But you're right; it makes things harrowing a little bit too. You don't know how it's going to turn out.
And she has to be responsible for so much. And I think, as I said, anybody who reads this book, and I like the title too of the new book. I thought it was really great. A Minute to Midnight is again.
Yes.
You have. A wonderful way, and this is all the time, that where you do this slow reveal, and in this book particularly, I think you have more twists and turns in this book than and I had. That ending was a complete surprise to me. I mean, I can anticipate, but it did come as a surprise, and I loved it.
Good. I'm glad. That's what every writer wants. They want to be able to have that, suspense and that build up and people trying to figure it out and then surprised at the end. And that's what you want. I mean, I love reading books like that, too, where I get to the last page and I'm like, wow, that was, never saw that one coming. That was really cool. Very well done.
Yeah, it is. It's really, that's exactly what I thought when I got to the end. Whew. And I took a deep breath. I said, wow, that was a good one. I said, ooh. Of course, when you started, you knew, of course, when you started that you were going to be writing a series. So you had it sort of all laid out in your mind how things would progress. But I dare say that there were some even surprises for you along the way.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't know how the ending was going to shake out until, I got to the end, really. And a lot of the things that I was writing about during the course of the book, I had not outlined, but they felt natural for me while I was writing the book, and I thought of things along the way and then some of the twists and turns and misdirections. I write very much by the seat of my pants, but I put a lot of thought into it as well. Just because I don't outline things from A to Z doesn't mean that I don't have a lot of depth of thinking about the story and what makes sense for me at that moment in time. And I just never want to be hamstrung by an outline that I wrote 5 months ago, and now I'm sitting down to write the book from this outline. And I need to get to know my characters on the page before I can really tell what they're going to do. So writing an outline and then trying to cram in, okay, here's what the outline says this character has to do, it just doesn't feel natural that way. I need to spend time with them on the page and get to know them a little bit.
And they do, when you're writing, they do start taking over. They start sort of running their own show.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And you should want that, too, because you're going to be spending a lot of time with them, and you want them to feel real in many respects. And I think because at the end of the day, you want the reader to care about them, and the more real they can be to the reader, the more they're going to care about them. And that's a really important thing. That's an experience and a relationship you want to have in a book. If I put characters into a plot where a lot of things happen to them, good and bad, but I don't build the characters to such an extent that you actually care, then what's the point? You're not going to really care if they live or die or something bad happens to them or something good happens to them. You just don't care. So as a writer, you have to take care with their characters to make them authentic and relatable and universally appealing to readers. Otherwise, they're just not going to care about the story.
And of course, I mean, you're so good at it. And so now you've written a major female character. Of course, Vega Jane, that you write for younger people, you have the same pattern there, that you really get us into the character and you reveal the story in a way that just drives it forward, and the reader is caught up in the story. And this is, I mean, as I said, it's so funny how I talked to so many writers and they're absolutely fantastic, but with you, you really connect with readers, and that's so important, because one of the things is it sort of makes me sad that I think it's like, what, one quarter of people never read a book, and I'm thinking, I just want I want people to get into books more. And I think one of the wonderful things that you do with your Wish You Well Foundation is that you give away books to people who are underprivileged or who might be getting food from the food banks. And these are the people who sometimes can't afford books. And sometimes I have a feeling many people are just learn to read by getting these books free from you.
Yeah, and we also fund literacy organizations across the country that help people learn how to read at a higher level. And our mission is to eradicate illiteracy, you know, making sure people can read, making sure people have access to books. Those are all important things we should all care about.
Because without, you know, people sometimes say, oh, I watch television, I watch movies. You don't really, I don't think your mind really grasps a lot unless you see it on paper. And I think that's one of the sad things that when we hear more and more about people who don't know simple things in history, it's because they hear it maybe on the news, they see it in a movie, but they don't read the books. And once you read a book, it really does stay in your mind.
It absolutely does. I mean, it's just people have always enjoyed stories, and you know, people used to read a lot more, and there was a reason for that because it's a great thing to do. It develops your mind. It gives you experiences that you would not be able to personally have. It makes you helps you understand people better, and you know, you can stay in one place, and never travel anywhere, but see the world through books. And that's a very powerful thing.
Well, I'm finding one of the ways that I'm trying to do more and more events. Particularly after BoucherCon last year, where I talked to readers and found out how very enthusiastic they become, how involved they become in an author's work, and just how they start thinking more about the world. And so I'm doing more and more from my side. I do more now outreach to people. And one of the ways I found is if I tell people, well, you know, wouldn't you like to write your family's story? And they'll say, well, yeah, but I can't write. And then I say, yeah, but if you start reading, soon after, you know, after that, you'll start seeing how words look on paper, that joy on paper that I'm always talking about. And I am. I have quite a few people now who are writing memoirs, but before they start writing, they start reading, which is really exciting.
Right. Exactly. No, it's a great thing, and you're right. People, the world will be much better if a lot more people read, and you know, that's what we all sort of drive for. You do it with your show. I try to do it with the things that I do because we know that it benefits everybody.
And it just we need people to have a greater depth of understanding of the world, of history. You know, we always say, you know, if you don't know history, you know, you just keep making the same mistakes over and over. And that's why we need people to get into reading and to learning. And I like, you know, in your books, there's always some, people always come away learning something new, that whether it's about a place in Georgia that we never heard about or never thought about. You always have these little historical things in your books that I think are just great.
I like reading books where I come away feeling a little bit smarter than when I open the page, the first page of the book. And I always like to sprinkle in things like that where there can be learning experiences, something that interests me that I think will interest other people. And, you know, it's good to be curious about stuff. You know, we go through life only once, and it should be a learning experience. We should be curious about things that happened around us, things that came before, so we can avoid the same mistakes in the future. And information is good. All information is good.
So aren't we all lucky that your mother did not give you an electronic toy to play with, but instead gave you a notebook and said, write something?
That's right. I'm very you know, grateful for her having done that, and also my parents taking us to the library every week so we could check out a bunch of books and read them and see the whole world. So it was great, you know, great experience. And books meant a lot to me. Growing up, they made me a different person than maybe I would have been, and I want to make sure that everybody has that opportunity.
So what's on the plate next? What are you, it's, you know, when somebody's working, you're so prolific, and I think one of the reasons that your writing is so good is that you stay fresh. So this whole new series is seems like a breath of fresh air, and then you can turn around and then go now into another one of your series. What series are you working on now?
Yeah, the next one is Amos Decker, My Memory Man. So he'll be the next book that we see, and I take him to a new place, a new mystery, and continue to evolve his character. So it was nice after finishing with Adelaide Pine to move on to something else. And, you know, they're both very different characters, but both characters I enjoy very much being with.
And, of course, then I don't know, are you finished with Vega Jane? Because Vega Jane, my Sunday school kids were like, Vega Jane, Vega Jane.
I never say never, and I may take a stab at another fantasy series too. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I'm glad it was great. It took me out of my comfort zone and allowed me to experience something totally different, and it was wonderful.
Well, I always get from my listeners, and particularly now that I'm talking more at events, and people will come and say, how can I be successful? And it's always the same. Just write a good book. And of course, when you started writing, you were like everybody else. Thanks to your mother, you were writing early on, and you learn as you write. The more you write, the better you get. I mean, even in this series, the first book was great. The second book is even greater, and you get better. And that's the exciting thing about being a writer, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you can go one or two ways. You can sort of, put yourself on cruise control and try to decide, how did I do it last time? And I can subtly tweak what came before and turn out a new book. Or you can challenge yourself, get out of your comfort zone, and really try to improve your craft and storytelling with each book. And that's the path I've chosen, and I work really hard at it.
Well, it's apparent. Because nothing is stale with you. It just gets better and better. And it's so exciting when I'm reading your books and I'm thinking, wow, I'm just so enthralled with the stories. And as I said, with the new book, the twists and turns. And I want to tell people, really get this book, because first of all, it's just a wonderful read. And it's called A Minute to Midnight. And as you start the book, you'll say, and it's a standalone, so people don't have to have read the first book. If they're reading this first, they'll want to go back because they'll just want to know more of the story. And the wonderful thing about it is, as I said, because of the freshness of the stories, you have a layer of different stories that go throughout the, come and go. And you always feel like you're moving along. You're just traveling with the story. And it's very exciting. Your writing is very exciting.
Well, I appreciate it very much. It's nice to hear. I know you read a lot and you talk to a lot of writers and all that. And it's just, we're glad you're out there promoting reading and writers. And it's always nice to talk to you. And I do. I take it very seriously. I consider it a craft. And a craft is something you keep trying to improve upon.
And what's happening? What else? Anything to announce? Are you going to... I'm waiting for well, some of them to become streaming videos because...
Yeah, we got a couple of projects to work on, a TV series for Amos Decker.
Oh, good.
And another story, not based on one of my books, a sort of a spy thriller with a woman as the lead that they're working on with some streaming services. And, hopefully they'll come to fruition. It's tough to get anything done out there, but they're working hard on it, and hopefully I'll have something to announce soon.
Well, you have to make sure you come on Joy and Paper to announce it, because for me... I used to write scripts, and this is one of the things that happens to me. When I get a book that I really love, or a character that I really love, I visualize it as if I'm watching a movie. And that happened the very first time I read Amos Decker. When I read The Memory Man, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, who is this guy? I want more of this guy. I want to see this guy. I want a movie of this guy. And I was, every time I would pre-order the books, because he's just somehow I just connected with him. I just like him so much. And I would love to see, you know, a streaming. One of the reasons that, you know, I do look forward to something like that is that people then go back or start reading the author's work. Right?
They absolutely do. Absolutely. You know, I've got a big backlist, and I have so many people come up to me at book events saying, oh, my God, I picked you up for the first time and this series, and I didn't know if you had any other books. And then when I saw how many books there were, I was like, oh, my God, this is fantastic because I can just jump into all of them. And I feel the same with other writers I discover. You know, I always love it when they have a backlist and I can just go and have – it's like opening a treasure chest and seeing you have lots of different things to pull out and enjoy.
It is, and that's why, like, when they did Bosch – there were many people who had not read at all any Bosch, but then they go back.
Right.
Whoa! Then they want to read more, and they would love more books. And I know that will happen with the lovely thing about you. Once they start, for example, the Camel Club is one of my favorite. Also, one of my mailman's favorite.
Yes.
this book he knows, like, I think by heart practically, and you know, so funny. But that is oh my goodness, the Camel Club series would be so good, and they need on this streaming video, they need more and fascinating writers and fascinating stories, and you have them.
Pardon the interruption, Patsy. We do need to move on to the next station.
Okay, so David, I have to just thank you again for being on Joy on Paper for the sixth time, and I look forward to you coming back soon, okay?
I will definitely do it. I always enjoy talking to you. Have a great holiday.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now, David. Now, okay, well, it was fantastic again to talk to David Baldacci. What can I say? But remember one thing. His mother gave him a notebook, and so he started writing. And you can do the same thing, because one of the joys of life is to hear your words in Audible, to see them on a page of a book. Like, how can you imagine how happy David Baldacci is? He can look at so many books now. But how did he do it? He did it because he started writing a page a day. Now he probably now does 40 pages a day, but you can do it too. So all you have to do is start writing, and one day you will hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a program on Hallmark Channel. You never know. Again, just enjoy your day today. I've enjoyed my day. Bye-bye now.